Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm hungry after that intro. Sponsorship that makes me hungry is a good thing, Jason.
Well, trust me, ever come to Edmonton, I'll take you to Vivo. It's unbelievable. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, seriously, all I would say is don't eat very much before you get there because, ugh, it's awesome. I love it.
That sounds good.
I'm not sure goalies would have it for a pregame meal or not. We'll see. I don't know if goalies are everybody's big on pasta, so I'm sure they would have their fettuccine. It's unreal. A player that very few fans in Edmonton or even around the league know much about tonight, Garrett Sparks will be the goaltender for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Give us a scouting report on Sparks.
Well, I wish I had a deeper one. The reality is it's a lot harder to get video on guys as they come up, you know, even as well as he's played in the American Hockey League. But, you know, from what I was able to, you know, dig up and spend about a half an hour looking over some of the footage, this is a guy who has really good hands, is really tough to beat down low, really quick with his legs, doesn't play like Antti Niemi, but reminds me of that in terms of how tough it can be to beat him along the ice. One of those guys that, when you think you've got an open net or a tap in, he's got the ability to spread it out and get those pads stacked and really kind of almost splits like pitched forward, a little bit scrambly, but he'll get there with the pads 9 times out of 10. And, you know, those are the kind that they're not always that pretty, but they tend to be momentum changers. When you think you've got an empty net on Garrett Sparks, you need to elevate. Like I said, good hands, good glove hands. When you watch the highlights, there are a lot of them. And sometimes though you wonder, it does have a tendency to pull off on the glove side, even with those leg pad saves that we talked about, a tendency with both the hands and the feet to reach a little bit. And, that's the kind of thing you can sometimes get away with for a while at certain levels. But as you move up, you need to make sure you're a little more centered and a little more behind those pucks as opposed to putting yourself in a position to have to reach. So I, like a lot of people, I'm really curious to see how he does tonight. I know that that's part of the work that they've done in the American Hockey League and even last year in the East Coast Hockey League is try and simplify the game so that great reactive ability I just talked about, he's not using it all the time. He doesn't put himself in a position to have to rely on it. Make more saves with positioning, and then when you do have to go to the emergency route, just open the car doors and let it go, but not as often as he had to in the past. So I think a lot of people are really curious to see this guy play. He's pretty popular on social media. He's a part of a Facebook group that is pretty popular in the goaltending world, and so there'll be a lot of people tuning into this game tonight, in the goalie world at least, just to see Garrett Sparks play.
Well, there's Sparks and Condon and Darling that are all together on the GGSU Facebook group, although they probably should change their name at some point. But I don't know if it'd be a competition per se, but when you see Condon and Darling and now Sparks, and he's far from proven by any stretch of the imagination yet, right? But you're seeing some young guys who have come in and when given the opportunity have played well.
Yeah, and, you know, they have, what they've done is they've fed off each other. I mean, you mentioned the Facebook group. It's about 18,000 strong in terms of goaltenders on there and a lot of equipment talk and technique talk. And Sparks is a guy who, you know, I don't know if it's a part ownership role, but he's heavily involved in it. He runs camps in the summers, the GGSU Legends camps. And all three of those guys, you talk about Darling, who came onto the scene, you know, again, out of the SPHL and ECHL, wins a cup as the backup and, you know, and actually helped them win a cup by getting through the first round when Crawford was struggling in Chicago last year. You see Mike Condon, another active member of the group. He takes over for Carey Price now that he's hurt, and now Garrett Sparks getting a chance in the NHL. They all worked at the goalie schools together this summer that GGSU put on, and you know, I mean, we're not talking just elite young netminders at these goalie schools. It's a 50-50 mix of young kids trying to get better right through the junior ranks, and beer leaguers like myself go to these camps to learn from these guys. Shannon Savatos was a guest instructor. So when you see the success that Darling had last year and you get the group together, I've talked to Condon about it. I've talked to Sparks about it. They feed off what Darling did last year. They're inspired by it. They see that it's possible. I mean, we're coming out of an era where for the longest time, it was everything went to the Swedes and the Finns. If you needed a goaltender, that's where you looked. You you looked overseas for a free agent. But we're seeing these guys getting a chance to come out of the minor leagues and getting a chance to work their way up. And, you know, again, feed off each other. They motivate each other. They see that it's possible. They also see the steps that are taken. I mean, you know, Scott Darling rebuilt his body. Mike Condon, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. The MMA training rebuilt his body. Garrett Sparks will tell you he changed his diet and the way he approached goaltending in the past year, you know, really becoming a professional in the truest sense of the word for the first time. And they really are all kind of feeding off each other and building off each other. And so it's, you know, tonight you'll have all three of them in the NHL.
Kevin Woodley joins us. Crease Lightning, as we talk all things goaltending every Monday afternoon. And we talk about Condon. We're going to see a lot more of him because Carey Price is now out 6 weeks, potentially. They're not saying what it is. Maybe it's his MCL again. We're not sure. And if it is, you wonder if it's longer. Because if it is his MCL, is this going to be similar to Ryan Miller?
Yeah, that's what you worry about. It's, you know, 6 weeks is the minimum, they're saying. You know, there's some people suspect it is the MCL, the same one that he injured on the Kreider hit in the playoffs a couple of years ago. And the reality is, as Ryan Miller told me this summer, it's a 4 to 6 week injury in terms of getting back on the ice, but it's a 4 to 6 month injury in terms of actually feeling like you've recovered. And for him, it was 5 months in that window before he felt like he was ready to, you know, to really kind of go to work this summer and get ready for this season. Like, there was nothing bothering him at all, a full 5 months. So the fact that he's re-injured it once, if it is indeed the MCL already this season, the fact he's had this injury in the past, and, you know, for Carey, once he was ruled out of the playoffs that year, he shut it down right through into July, and that's not an abnormal for him. He does tend to take the whole month of July off and not start skating till August. But again, I think in that case, coming off an injury, was also indicative of the timelines that it really takes to get fully recovered. So people are going to be watching him carefully, even if it's 6 to 8 weeks before he comes back. I think it's going to be the full season. You got to keep an eye on him and be careful with him because he's probably not going to be fully recovered until this time next year or at least the start of next season.
The main question is going to be, Kevin, did he rush back, right? Especially for goaltenders, you know, your flexibility, your movement, you're pushing off. You know, there's a lot of stress on the knees. I don't know enough about the situation to suggest that whatsoever, but you train with the goalies a lot, and if a guy's got a little bit of a weakness in his knee, how easy is it to re-aggravate it in the goaltending position?
Well, to be honest, if it was an MCL originally, I mean, and there's various degrees of sprains, right, which are really various degrees of tearing, and that's what an MCL sprain, if that's what it is it's varying degrees of tearing in there. And you know, so if it was an MCL originally, you would be surprised that it was a two-week window. Like we just said, it's a 4 to 6 week injury. So it's tough because we don't know. If we find out down the road that it was indeed an MCL, then you know, I think hindsight's easy, right? He re-injured it, and that's an injury that tends to take longer to heal, and he was back in a couple weeks. So a lot of people are going to wonder that. But without information about what it actually is, it's really tough to kind of speculate. Like, as much as an MCL takes a long time to fully recover, I think if you're a Canadiens fan, you're probably happier that it's an MCL as opposed to if we were to find out that he had a groin injury that took him out and then another groin injury that took him out a few weeks later, that's when you start to get nervous about hips. So many times we see repetitive groin injuries in goaltending end up in hip surgery, and the reality is you end up using all those muscles in the groin differently to compensate for labrum issues in the hip. We saw it with guys like Pascal Leclerc. He just kept blowing out his groin, and to the point where there was a point during one of his rehabs where I'm like, when are they going to examine his hip? And sure enough, when they did, they found tearing in there. So as much as the knees are one of the, you know, they can be a tough thing to recover from, if you're a Canadiens fan, you're probably happy it's not a groin right now. Because once those start happening and continue to happen, you start to look at the hips, and those are, now we're talking 4 to 6 month recoveries with surgery likely an option. And you know, the other one to keep an eye on here in Canadian goaltending is Hammond, because as I understand it, he's had another setback. So, hey, it's a tough position to stay healthy in, and that's why you need three in the NHL these days.
Well, you do, but then Johnny Orcho doesn't get picked up on waivers.
Yeah, and I have pretty good information that he would have at the start of the season. I wonder how much of this is other teams finding answers or maybe developing a bigger belief in the answers they had on hand in the meantime, and how much of it is Ordeo's struggles early this season. So I know there were a couple teams that saw him as an upgrade if he were to go on waivers before the start of the season. I just think once you get when the Flames sent him down, you combine his struggles with where everyone else was at in net. It's not like you can just claim him and dump him. You got to keep him on your team in the NHL, so you have to have a spot for him. And we all know how poorly three goaltenders tends to fit into two nets, even if it's over a couple of weeks. So, you know, it's good for the Flames. There was a reason they were worried. There were other teams interested. And now with him going down, they keep that insurance policy of a third goaltender. And you wonder, you know, speaking of hips and hip surgery, you wonder if that doesn't, you know, leave them feeling a little more comfortable with letting John Gillies get him to get things taken care of physically, maybe have the surgery now instead of trying to rehab and wait to the summer, because you know you've got, you know, we don't have recall waivers anymore, so you've got Ordeo for the long term, and if you run into injuries, you can bring him back up.
Seeing anything different in Anders Nilsson?
Different from when? Different from the early years of the Islanders when goaltending coach was just a rumor in that organization and there was nobody to help him?
No, but even like this year, like, you know, he got off well, then he had some struggles, but for the last, you know, seven or eight starts, you know, he's looked pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing in his game, if you keep things off the wing and outside the middle of the ice with his size and the way he's using it right now, efficiently, not opening up holes, closing on pucks, the way he's tracking, the work we talked about that he's doing with Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach there, in terms of the head trajectory and the tracking, and he's not giving up much. The only time where, you know, if you give up the middle of the ice, he moves well enough that he can take more ice in that crease, and you've seen him get caught a little deep a couple of times and sort of get caught looking over the shoulder on the glove side instead of kind of getting out and then tracking into it. That's a pretty tough nit to pick at this point because he's been so good, but that's about the only thing that's left in his game, is to have the confidence, because he's moving so well, to get out a little more aggressively when the Oilers do give up looks in the middle of the ice. Because everything else right now, like you said, he's just moving very efficiently. He's playing a very conservative, is not the right word, just a kind of a smart. He's never taken himself out of the play, out of the position. He's not chasing. He's using his size very effectively right now. And, you know, these are some of the signs that, you know, we talked about as far back as the summer, Jason, about what they saw in him, what they knew about the things he had learned about this technique over the past couple of years, and how it might be a fit, in particular in Edmonton, with a goalie coach who's ahead of the curve on it. And, you know, I think you're seeing signs of that paying off early for Anders Nilsson.
And the other thing is, it's not like he's getting hung out to dry every night. The Oilers don't give up a ton of chances, surprisingly enough. Sure, they give up some, but in most games, it's not like the Oiler goaltender is facing significantly more high-level opportunities than the opposing goalie.
Yeah, there's been a couple moments, but it's not the volume, it's the quality sometimes with them. I mean, and again, I point to lateral movement, and there are stretches where they just give up that seam so easily, and the full cross ice where the goaltender's got to completely shift from one side to the other. But for Nilsson, the way he plays positionally, it's a shorter shift. And because he's so big, he's taking up space and he's moving. He's getting early rotation with the way he tracks and moving that torso across. So he's coming across early rotation, set and square early. So it's a shorter distance, and he's doing it in a way that's putting him in position and on angle really early. So even when they give it up, he's there. He's there early and he's set, and you got to make a pretty good shot to beat him around that frame.
Kevin, always great to catch up with you, man. We'll do it again next Monday.
Sounds good.